Welcome back to Mosaics. I'm Holly Beach at the Idaho Office for Refugees. If you're just new to Mosaics, this is a podcast that highlights stories from throughout Idaho of Idahoans who often came from different countries, and we get to learn and hear about their cultures and their journeys to get here to Idaho. So today we have a wonderful guest I'm excited to introduce you to, Anish Shamim. Hi, Anish.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So Anish used to work actually right downstairs from where I am at Economic Opportunity. And if you watched last week's podcast with Claudia, you heard about Economic Opportunity. He recently started a new job at the City of Idaho doing the community engagement. And I'm excited to hear more about your work there. He also has worked at the College of Idaho. You worked at the College of Western Idaho.
Yes. Went to College of Idaho.
Yes, went to College of Idaho. And your family was from Pakistan and immigrated here when you were 3 years old. So I'm excited to get into your story and learn more about you. And thanks so much for being on Mosaics today.
Thank you for having me. Super excited to get to chat.
So just to kind of start us out, this is we were talking before we started recording that I'm a dog person, you're a cat person, and your cat had a really cool name. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, so his name is Tara. It means star in Urdu. I got him as a full quarantine kitten right when he was like 6 weeks old, and he's been my best friend ever since. We're inseparable, pretty much.
That's pretty sweet. I also have a quarantine puppy, and it's 4 years now since that crazy time. Feels like longer, shorter. I don't know. Years don't really make sense since COVID. What was life like for you during that time?
It was interesting. It was a very like quick transition from just like normal life, because I had just started at Economic Opportunity maybe a few months before lockdown happened. So I was just getting into the swing of things, figuring out like, okay, cool. I have a real person job now. Need to figure out how this works, working full time. Let's see how it goes. And then it was like, okay, cool. The office is closing for 2 weeks. Okay, no problem. Sure. And then the 2 weeks became 2 years, and it was an interesting transition. There was a lot of just kind of professional development things that I was struggling with throughout that time. It was a point of transition for sure. And with everything going on, it was extremely difficult. And being with Economic Opportunity, it was also a super, super busy time, because there was a lot of folks that were needing some sort of assistance, whether it be with rent or with house payments or utilities or car payments. So it was pretty consistent, the amount of work that was coming in. So it never felt like I was just like kind of sitting around doing nothing at home. But it was a lot. Wow. And I just had moved out of my parents' house that a couple months after I had gotten my cat too. So it was like navigating, living by myself, working a full-time job, taking care of an animal, and also existing in a pandemic. It was an interesting experience. I'm glad I had my cat with me, because otherwise I would have gotten stir crazy back at home.
Yeah.
But it was a learning experience. I'm glad we've gone out of it and we're back into the swing of things. But I even noticed like coming back to working full time or just like existing with people was such a wild experience. Like, I remember right before the pandemic hit, my family and I were lucky enough to go to Mecca to do the Umrah at the Kaaba over there. And like thinking back, that was November, like right when like COVID was starting in 2019. And I just think back, I was like shoulder to shoulder with thousands of people. And now it's like, can I do that again? Like, it's like completely shifted the way that I interact with people or see the world. I like to think that I've gotten back to normal as we've gotten in later parts of 2024, but there's still those moments.
Yeah, it is still weird being in crowds and being like, this would have been really freaky not that long ago. Can you explain more about that trip? You said the Mecca. Can you explain where you went and what you did?
So the Umrah, one of the five pillars of Islam is to do the Hajj, which is the pilgrimage to the Kaaba in Mecca. Doing that, it's a very specific time of year that you do the Hajj. If you go to Mecca and visit the Kaaba at other points of the year, it's called the Umrah. It's the same kind of pilgrimage, same rituals and stuff that you would do. It's just like significantly less people, because not everyone is going at once. So we flew into Medina and stayed there a couple of days, and then began the pilgrimage to Mecca. And it's a whole ritual where you stop at a specific mosque on the way from Medina to Mecca. You change into what is called an ihram, which is pretty much like two long sheets of cloth, pretty much, that you just kind of wrap around yourself. One of the main pillars of doing the Umrah or the Hajj is that everyone who goes there is equal. There's no race, there's no caste, there's no class. Everyone's going in there with the same goal in mind, and for the same reason. So everyone looks the same. Mm-hmm. There's like, you're not supposed to wear anything with stitching. So it's just like that cloth that's wrapped around you. And you keep that ihram on the entire time you're performing the Umrah. So the rest of the drive to Mecca, getting to the Kaaba, performing the various rituals, like walking around it, praying and such over there. And then finally walking between the two mountains or hills that they have kind of like underneath it now, all with like various religious significance. But just visiting the Kaaba and seeing it for the first time, like as we got there at like 9 o'clock at night, it's dark outside. Still hundreds of, if not thousands of people just around the Kaaba doing their thing.
Can you explain what that is? I've seen pictures of it.
So the Kaaba is pretty much like the black box that's in Mecca. When Muslims pray, every prayer mat is always facing towards the Kaaba. Mm. It's like, the like most holy place in Islam, pretty much. And like seeing it, like after seeing like pictures and like, yeah, we pray towards it. It's on my prayer mat. But like seeing it in person was a moment that I honestly will never forget. Mm. Like, I know like you like to make fun of people who like cry at the sight of some things. But honestly, the emotions were just so overflowing that I'm just standing there just like tears in my eyes, just dumbfounded pretty much. Oh, it was phenomenal.
Wow. So what did that journey like do for you coming back? How did it change you going forward?
That's a great question. I'm off and on with the religion for sure. I'm not as strict and follow it as closely as I maybe should or should not. But going on this trip really like reframed my relationship with religion on how I view it, how it impacts me. Because like going there, I felt the sense of community and that spiritual shared nature that everyone had over there. So it's like, okay, so I don't want to just like completely move away from Islam. No, it's a very core function of, or part of who I am, but I use it to balance with the rest of who I am. Because like growing up in America, it's a very interesting balance of having Pakistani culture at home, and that's what I'm taught, and then going to school, and none of that being applicable. Mm. Being made fun of the ways that I say things, and like the way that my family does things, there was always that kind of disconnect. There was like two separate identities that I was kind of wrangling with. But going on this trip really allowed me to reframe my relationship with religion and my culture overall. It gave me a whole new perspective on how I view myself as an individual, as a Pakistani, as an American. Honestly, it was truly a life-changing trip, for sure.
That's so cool. I'm sorry to hear about you getting made fun of as a kid. Did that kind of make you more staunch of like, no, I'm proud of this? Or did it make you want to kind of just bury it for a while?
It was, when I was younger, it was more, it was like, oh, I'm not going to talk about it. Oh, I'm just going to avoid it. But in like being made fun of it, thankfully, and I'm super blessed that it wasn't like very aggressive, or it was more like I had a sleepover with a friend of mine and I asked him to get up and close the light instead of turn off the light. Mm-hmm. Because in Urdu, when you say turn off the light, the word translates to close. So I'm just saying, hey, close the light. And he was just like, sorry, what am I doing? And from then on, it just became a huge joke with me and him. It's like, oh, you want me to go close this? But those little things. So there was nothing super significant. But like those little things like made me like, oh, I guess I am different. I do have a different upbringing or different cultures than the folks that I'm friends with and I go to school with. And at first it was like, okay, I'm different. That's weird. How do I kind of go about it? Do I have to choose? Do I have to be a Pakistani person? Do I have to be an American? How do I grapple with this? And then over time, as I did more reading and learning about myself, it became like, yeah, I am different and that's okay. Difference is not necessarily a thing of opposition. It's just a natural thing that happens. It complements each other.
Now you can hold both and feel true to yourself.
Exactly. Like I struggled so much with the idea of being like too white for brown people, but also too brown for white people. And that was a weird kind of like, how do I exist in these situations or in these communities? And then it's like, okay, I am a blend of both. I think the term that I learned as I like did my research on it is like a third culture kid. Mm-hmm. That is what I am. And that's a unique experience. And I have just as much of a right to be in a space as someone who is fully white or fully Pakistani, mm-hmm. or however you want to define it.
Have you been back to Pakistan?
Unfortunately, no. The last time I was in Pakistan was when I was in second grade. So it's been quite a long time. I definitely want to go back, but all of our family has moved out, or like close family has moved out to different parts of the world. So there's no real like drive to go back. The main thing I want to do is just go and spend like a week just eating at every like roadside stall that I can and getting super sick because of it, but just enjoying all the food.
Yeah. Does your family still stay true to the traditional cuisine of Pakistan, like at home and stuff?
It's really difficult because every time like I'm asked here, like, oh, what's the best like Indian or Pakistani food can I get here or anywhere I go? It's like, my mom.
Yeah.
Sorry. Like, she's changed my frame of reference so badly that any Pakistani restaurant or Indian restaurant I go to, it's like, eh, my mom's is better.
Yeah. Well, kudos to her.
Oh, it's great. And she taught me how to cook and got me instilled with a love of cooking. So I'm keeping those dishes going. I have a lot easier time making like chicken tikka or some kadai or something that I do like pasta most of the time.
Oh, it's so much better too. That's great. Like, maybe you and your mom could come do a duo. We have those culinary classes.
Oh, that would be so
with
fun.
Imid. Maybe you could come do a duo class and
that would be fun.
Make chicken. You just call it chicken tikka.
Yeah, chicken. Yeah. Like there's so many types of dishes.
Do we have any Pakistani restaurants here?
I think the closest is Taj Mahal. It's owned by Pakistanis, but it's like Indian Pakistani food combined. And I mean, there's very little difference between the two anyway. The only like distinction that I make is that Pakistani food has a lot more beef and meat associated with it, and Indian food is a little bit more with veggies and chicken and such. But other than that, it's all the same.
I was doing like just watching kind of YouTube about Pakistan before coming just to kind of learn more and learning that Urdu is the official language, but there's like 75 other languages spoken. What's that like for your family? Do you speak multiple? I mean, English and Urdu, do you have others?
So yeah, English and Urdu are the main ones. I grew up, Urdu was my first language. I learned English when I came to the States and it's been constant at my parents' house for sure. Both my mom and dad both speak to us, me and my sister, solely in Urdu. We respond both in English and Urdu, but they mostly speak in Urdu. And with my grandma, who's still with us, we only speak to her in Urdu. And so I'm lucky that I've kept up the language skills over the years. And recently I've been giving myself a mission to improve my Urdu because on my Instagram now it's picked up that I'm a Pakistani guy. So it's been giving me a lot more like reels about like, that are in Urdu and Hindi. So I'm like picking up like, oh, that's how you actually say that word. Nice. Okay. So I'm like working on my accent a bit, which has been super fun. But other languages, my parents know Punjabi and such, but it's mostly Urdu and English. What really irked me, though, growing up is that they have their own, like, slang or, like, Pakistani version of Pig Latin that they do.
Mm-hmm. Your parents?
My parents do. Oh. And they, like, used it with their cousins and their siblings as well, like, as a language that they could use to talk without their parents knowing.
But nobody else knows it. It's just your family.
They've explained to me so many times, and I just don't get it. They add, like, a fe sound in between, like, all the words. And it's just, and they say it so fast. Like, it's literally a third language for them. And they just kind of, if they don't want us to understand what they're saying, they just...
That's so funny.
Speak it out. And we're like, okay, this isn't fair.
That's brilliant. Kudos. If you're going to make up your own language, you deserve to be able to speak in privacy.
It works for them.
That's amazing. So it's you and your sisters?
Mm-hmm. I have two younger sisters. And they're my best friends. Oh, I love them so
that's
much.
That's great. Is your family kind of still in the Boise area?
Yeah. We moved into the Treasure Valley in 1998, and we've been here ever since.
So where did you initially come to when you came to the U.S.?
Idaho. We came straight into Boise at the time. My uncle moved to Idaho. He went to U of I for a little bit, got his degree over there. He married a local Idahoan here. And when we first moved from Pakistan, we just moved in with them, lived with them for about a year, and then got, an apartment complex like over on like Vista by the airport, like the Oak Leaf, whatever they are, apartments.
Yeah.
Okay. And then like slowly just kind of blossomed out into the valley. So between Boise and Meridian, it's been home.
Wow. Are there other Pakistani community members? Is that a very large community here?
Unfortunately, no. There's a lot of Indians for sure, especially because of like Micron and such. But the Pakistani population is relatively on the lower side. There has been a significant increase over the last few years. I'm learning more and more about more Pakistanis that are around. But with how much Boise has changed over the last 20 years, it was honestly a point where, like, yeah, we knew all the Pakistanis and Indians that were in the area. And now it's like, there's a lot of us. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep track. We try to rope them in and bring them into the community that we have, but it's relatively small, the ones mm-hmm. that we are in contact with and hang out with.
Yeah, and I always think, too, like, just because you're from the same country of origin doesn't mean you're going to get along. Like, mm-hmm. I can imagine if I was living in Spain or whatever, I wouldn't necessarily want to be friends with every other American there.
Yeah, so, right.
I mean, depending.
There's been some people that I'm just like, you're cool. I like hanging out with you. Yeah. And then like, absolutely not. I do not want to be around you.
Names? No, I'm just kidding.
I could call them out. That'd
no,
be funny.
No, names. No names. So you talked about being a third culture kid, and that's kind of something that our office with the Refugee Speakers Bureau has done work with in the past, mm-hmm. of going into schools. And what do you think are some of the positives to being a third culture kid? And what can you expand a little bit more on maybe some of the challenges that mm-hmm. you came through with that?
Yeah, I think a lot of the positives, it's like a build your own kind of culture at that point. You can pick the parts of each of the cultures that you're a part of and figure out which ones work best for you as a person and just kind of run with them. It's like you don't have to abide by the negative aspects of things. It's like, okay, cool. I don't really like how this is done in Pakistani culture. I don't have to follow that as closely because in like other cultures, it's the opposite. So it's not like necessarily picking and choosing, like this is what I want and this was what I want, but you kind of get to see the best of both worlds and create a new harmony out of it. But that does lead to some alienation. And I felt a lot of that growing up because it's like, yeah, I'm like the one brown person going to my high school. Mm-hmm. It's or like one of maybe three. Like there isn't that sort of connection that I can make with people. And even if I'm finding like looking online and trying to make friends with other Pakistanis in Pakistan, there is a significant difference on who I am as a person and who they are. So that kind of becomes discouraging, a little alienating at points, but it also opens up a new way of engaging with people because you understand where they're coming from and you can bring a new light and a new perspective with your relationship with them. And it's a balance. It takes some time to kind of figure out and navigate, but once it does start to make sense, it's easier to make connections with people. And I think it's a good jumping off point. It's like, I understand where you're coming from. I also do that, but here's a cool new way you can do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting when you shift away from maybe the tradition or trajectory mm-hmm. that came before you and your family and trying to figure out like, okay, what's my identity then if I'm not?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really following this religion anymore, not necessarily for you, but you know, that's kind of something that people wrestle with too, of like,
mm-hmm.
what's that heritage look like? What do you think you really value about the Pakistani culture? Like, what do you hold dear?
I think the easiest answer for me is the sense of community. Mm-hmm. That's always been something that I look and strive to achieve with every like kind of interaction that I have, is that building those connections and building that community. In Pakistan, you are so close with everyone in your community, extended family members, like second, third cousins. It's like consistent communication with them. You're as close with them as you are with your actual siblings. Mm-hmm. All your neighbors around know what's going on. You can rely on each other for help. And there are always like, there are issues that you face, like powers going out or things that are happening in Pakistan. The community just like rallies around each other and really builds and supports each other. And I feel like in America, things get a lot more siloed and very, very individualistic. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I really try to hold near and dear, is that sense of community. You have those connections with people, rely on those because people also can rely on you, and just kind of keep at it. Like, I live in an apartment complex. I don't interact that much with my neighbors, but I want to. Like, I want to. I live with them, right? They're around me pretty much all the time. And if something is happening, those are the people that I would go to right away. Like, something happens in the neighborhood or something happens in someone's house, they can rely on each other and have that sense of community. But it's so difficult because people are very siloed in their own little apartment complexes. I think I've only made friends with an elderly lady across the way from me and another gentleman one house down. And that's about it. Like, it's like passing conversations. Like, I've made my neighbor food every once in a while. I'll like bring over. Mm. Like, so I made some butter chicken. Here you go. Enjoy it. And she like hey, I need a pot to borrow. She's like, okay, cool, I got you. Or she has a question about some internet change that's going on. She'll come over. And like, that's the relationship I want with like everyone around me.
Yeah.
But like, there's a couple guys that live next to us that have a doormat that says, welcome to our maid, from Barbie movie, what Ken called the house, the Dojo Casa house or something. Like, that's their doormat. I'm like, that's awesome. I want to be friends with you guys. Yeah. It's like, hey, how's it going? And that's really about it.
Yeah.
So like that sense of community, like you know the people you're living around, you know people on a more, not more individual level, and like are there to help each other out when things come up.
Yeah, I do feel like the society, the way it has evolved here in America, kind of lost something. And it's like, how do you bake it back into the bread once it's out? You know,
exactly,
I don't know the answer to that.
And the pandemic also didn't help with connecting with people and going out of your way to say like hi or like being with people. I remember like when I was younger, like a baby, like first came to the US, super friendly baby, waving at everyone. In Idaho, that's normal, right? It's like, oh, hey, that's a cute little kid. I went to New York with my family. I was still like 3-4 years old and I'm like waving to people and like trying to say hi on the subway and I'm getting like nasty looks and I'm complaining to my parents like, why is everyone so mean? It's like, I love that about our area still, is that we still have that, even regardless of how much we're growing, is that that kindness is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps with community for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a little easier to build it once you have, like once you see the other person as a person and you're like, hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. How's your dog doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's so supportive. Like even at my workplace, like my dog had to have a little thing removed and people were so nice, like asking me how he was doing. One girl brought me flowers and I was
nice.
Oh my gosh. Like, cause they know I'm obsessed with my dog and it's just like, wow, that's pretty special. And you're working in the city to kind of build on that. Can you talk about your work and what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, I just started with the city of Boise about, I think, 8 months ago now as the community engagement coordinator. So I'm out building those connections, meeting with people, connecting with people, organizations, kind of looping them into what's going on with the city, what's going on with their organization, how can the city kind of tap in, promote it, just be involved, just kind of building that sense of community throughout, connecting organizations with each other, connecting people. I host First Thursdays at City Hall Plaza every month. That's been so much fun. This position has been so good, just to be able to go out and be my extroverted self, that I could just go at some random event and walk around for a couple of hours and just meet so many people and hear about their experiences and what they're doing and how they're working to make our community better. And then I can connect them with other people who are doing the same thing and just kind of like keep building this tapestry, I guess, of connections.
Yeah. And where do you see the kind of improvements that need to happen so that people who maybe are from a different country or speak a different language or have different cultural norms so that they can kind of feel more settled here? Do you see where we can do some better work?
I think in just bringing people into the fold, a lot of the times people just don't know what's going on. Or we as a city don't know what's happening around, and especially in those like smaller communities. So just kind of looping in people, making those, just kind of continuing on with that relationship building just amongst organizations, amongst people. I think that's what's really bringing people into the fold, because every time I interact with someone at a personal level, they are always so happy, so enthusiastic that the city is there or that this person is there listening to them. And it's a lot easier to then like, hey, you should also come to this cool event that's going on for this specific culture. Mm. And kind of just like sharing that information, it makes those events and those things that are going on around the city not necessarily just meant for the people that they're celebrating or the people that they're inviting, but rather it is an event for everyone that people can come in and experience something new. And I think it's just like that, the knowledge about things, keeping the word circulating, making sure people are aware, and just like building those connections. Is the more the people kind of interact and be with each other, I think the easier it is to make those connections and promote those kinds of like, oh, you're here, welcome, we're super glad you're here, look at all of these things that are happening that you can jump into, and can be overwhelming at first because there is a lot of stuff that's going on. But just having people that are involved that know everything that is going on, it's a lot easier than to just like help guide and navigate people into better areas. And like, hey, this is the stuff that you want to go do. It's like, hey, you can make some connections and make some friends over here. It's like, hey, this is where you can get like your food stamps, or like, this is some important resources and such. Just having those areas of those hubs, I guess, of community building.
Yeah. And you actually were just in Dallas for a welcoming initiative. Is that what it was called?
Welcoming Interactive.
Interactive. Yeah. And what was the whole goal of that? What did you take away from it?
Yeah. So the Welcoming Interactive was a conference put on by Welcoming America, which is an organization that helps cities become welcoming cities for immigrants and refugees. Boise was certified back in 2019 at first, and then just got recertified as a welcoming city this last year. So this was a conference of all the welcoming cities around the world, not just in the United States, but to come together to celebrate the work that Dallas has been doing to make that city more welcoming, and how the various other cities and the work that they're doing can be shared amongst the attendees. So there was a lot of people from Dallas, of course, that were at the event or at the conference. There was people from Spain, there were people from Mexico. So it was super cool just to see this such diverse group of people, all with that same goal of trying to make their communities and their cities more welcoming and more open to folks coming in. And it was incredible to hear about all the awesome work that other cities are doing. But I think it was also incredible to be able to share the work that we're doing here, and other people like try to like, oh, that's so cool, we want to do that in our city. Like, I remember I was having a conversation during one of the city tours that we took as a group. There was a lady from who just started working in refugee resettlement in North Dakota, mm-hmm. and she was talking about how difficult it is to see like educated folks coming in with like degrees, professionals from other countries coming in and having to work just kind of odds and ends jobs just to make ends meet, like doctors having to give up their professions and whatnot. And I was just like, hey, we have an organization that's doing work in just that. Global Talent is literally doing that work of like trained professionals, keeping them in their field here. And she was like, oh, that's incredible. So I got to make a connection for her, give some information about the work that Global Talent is doing so that she can take it back and run with it. And it was incredible. The city of St. Louis has a large Afghani population coming in, and they have their own kind of specific Afghani resettlement group that they're doing. In one of the workshops I went to, they did a whole explanation of how they were able to work on housing, work on phones and such, and build these kind of community centers for their Afghani refugees that are coming in. They got a bunch of funding to make it happen, mm-hmm. but they were talking about like how they were able to address some of the housing problems that they were having, of that lack of trust between landlords and renters, especially new refugees coming in, that they got a large grant that they were able not to just like pay the like rent or the first month's rent or move-in costs for the refugees moving into the house, but rather create a relationship with the landlord to be like, hey, we have this funding in case, like as a backup, you should rent to these people, and they'll go about their rent, they'll pay everything, it'll be good. If they don't, we have this in the bag with a safety net. Improved relationships between landlords, so they don't have to go specifically to the affordable housing, but they can work with any landlords mm-hmm. in the city, and has like alleviated their like housing problem pretty much with new refugees coming in, especially with the, like the large families and trying to find large homes to accommodate everyone.
Yeah.
They got like a grant from T-Mobile that gave like everyone 2 years of cell phones with like Wi-Fi and data and all like the amenities that they need, and really improved just the quality of life in general for not just the refugees coming in, but everyone. They have a huge Afghani cultural center over there that they like put on weekly events pretty much, celebrating culture, sharing it with the community. And it's just like they had their whole thing is like St. Louis welcomes Afghanis and whatnot. And it was so incredible just to hear about all the work that they're doing. It's like, okay, cool, what can I bring back and like tell our welcome center? It's like, hey, these are some things that are being done over there. Here's a contact. See if you can reach out to them.
That's so cool. I love Missouri. Like,
yeah, right?
My counterpart who works in the Missouri State Office of Resettlement came to our conference a couple years mm-hmm. ago, and we bonded and we still talk. Like,
that's so cool.
And we look at each other's newsletters and we like get ideas. And I'm just so impressed with all that they're doing. And,
it's so cool.
Yeah. And I'd love to be able to come together and learn, like you said, from mm-hmm. other states and other places. And housing obviously is a challenge here too. And mm-hmm. so different initiatives are in the works too. And not just for refugees, but for anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we grew up here and we've seen how it's changed and how intimidating it is to try to even think about home ownership, you know, unless you're like, have a partner that can help. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, seems very daunting.
I was getting lunch with Claudia a few weeks ago and she was like, Anish, why aren't you buying a house? And my response was just laughing. It's like, yep, that's a good one.
Yeah.
A very far off dream for me at the moment too. It's like, oh, cool. Let's establish my career a bit, start making some money. I guess I'll be renting for however long I can. I'd love to get a bigger place for me and my cat and get another cat for him as well. A little buddy to be around when I'm not there, but it's tough. Mm-hmm. Like rent is by itself mm-hmm. astronomical.
And that one's kind of hard too, because like whenever your lease is up, you're like, fingers crossed. You have no idea what they're going to do to your rent.
Exactly. We're so lucky. My roommate and I this year, we were like, okay, cool. We're expecting a big jump. And it was like $30. I was like, oh my God, thank goodness.
Wow, it's a good landlord.
Yeah.
And Boise's been really working hard on the housing initiatives. Are you mm-hmm. part of any of those or is that kind of outside?
A little bit. It's more outside of my purview, but there is a project that I've gotten involved in. We're calling it the Shoreline Innovation Project. We're looking at the Shoreline neighborhood, kind of like that area between like Americana River, kind of going around Rhodes Skate Park, a little into downtown, towards like Ann Morrison and the Lusk area. So that's a business development, redevelopment zone. We're looking into talking with the people that kind of exist in that area, homeowners, business owners, folks experiencing homelessness around that, learning about their experiences with that area, some of the things that they enjoy, some of the things that they're missing. And we're trying to compile as much of information as we can to kind of put together a kind of a plan for that area of how we can improve it, make it more vitalized for the people who already live and exist there. We're not looking to like move anyone out, of course, but just kind of like, what is that neighborhood needing to really make it thrive? What are the people who exist there? What are their experiences with it? What do they like about it? What do they wish would come in? So that's been a really super enlightening project so far. We've conducted a whole bunch of interviews with residents who've lived there for 5+ years. We had a whole section where we talked to skaters who frequent Rhodes Skate Park and their interaction with the area, business owners, people experiencing homelessness on how they interact with the area and how what it means to them. And we're taking all that information, kind of theming it, making it, having some insights out of it, and we'll propose some solutions that we can bring to mayor and council later on in the project. But it's kind of like, it's not necessarily directly housing related, but sort of looking into this specific area of Boise, seeing how people feel about it, what are their experiences, and how can we use that to make it better for all the people who already exist there.
Cool.
It's been a super eye-opening project, just seeing all the differences in what people are wanting and what people are, how they interact with the neighborhood. One person is like, no, we need like grocery stores. Like that's the main thing that we need here. And then another interview that we have with someone, they don't even mention food because they go to like Winco or like elsewhere to grab food. And just seeing like the differences of experiences of someone who relies on their car and like goes out and goes around places versus someone who just bikes and that's their way of interacting with the area, how different it is for them just to exist in the same neighborhood.
Mm, that's really interesting work. I'll be excited to see what comes from that.
Me too. We just had to take a step back this last week and kind of go back and find some more people to interview just to get a little bit more data. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really, really cool project to get involved in. And the cool thing about it is that it's not just like mayor's office or community engagement that's doing this work. It's people from all over the city. So we have like someone from the library, architects, someone from Parks and Rec, someone from the airport. Someone from RPath Home, there it's a police officer. Like there is a wide range of perspectives on the team as well, which gives it a whole new kind of level to it. It's been interesting because it's like we're looking at all these like quotes and data points from the interviews that we've done, and we're making themes and kind of making connections out of those. And it's like all this stuff I can do by myself super, super easily. Like I can make these connections, theme them, move on in a couple of hours. But working with a whole group of people and seeing how differently everyone's minds work on this data and how it processes differently has been a really cool experience.
That's really cool. Yeah, I've just been struck lately by the power of like roundtables, like small listening sessions. And I think sometimes you can get in your head of like, if it's not a big audience, it's not as valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But we recently had a roundtable. This woman that works in Jordan and helps refugees from all over who are in Jordan, they help them like with economic empowerment because their refugees in Jordan aren't allowed to get work authorization. So they have like community hubs that work on the economic empowerment and then also family relationships and community relationships. And we had a roundtable that kind of talked about family relationships and women and you know, in particular. And just some of the issues that came up were really eye-opening to me of like, you know, if you come from a different culture and you don't quite know what's going to happen if you call the police for help about something. Like in some cases, you know, someone might have reached out if there was like some violence in the home, thinking that that person would just kind of get scolded and then the police would move on. And then for 30 days, there's like a no contact order. Mm-hmm. And now they're in the court system and it's like the family never imagined that what would happen. Mm-hmm. And so like some of these different cultural, like, oh, that is a big, you know, if I lived in another country too, I would have no idea. Like I lived in South Africa and they said, if you need help, call our security company of the apartment complex rather than the police because they'll get here faster. Or like, yeah, just little things like that, that if they're not, you know, really explained to you, it's really hard to grasp some of these nuances of like the different ways that communities operate.
Absolutely.
So just kind of hearing about that and like hearing how other cultures might rely more heavily on like an elder or a religious mediator or like the community to help through those things instead of like the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just kind of eye-opening and I hope to be doing more of those, just listening and knowing like, you know, people when they first arrive here, they do get those reception and services, like the placement services.
Right, yeah.
But then after a while, you know, you're on your own and just following back up and just seeing like how they're doing and what they're facing and how they're thriving, you know, those kind of things. So that's something that I would like to do is just focus more on those listening sessions and hearing from people.
Mm-hmm. And just having like in those instances of like, yeah, there is the like very intensive like culture camps and like this is what to expect or like this is how like a banking system works and whatnot for new refugees coming in. I think that sense of like having a person or like a mentor or like some sort of partner that can guide you through that process as you keep going forward, just going back to that kind of sense of community building, it helps alleviate a lot of those instances that's like, hey, we're having this problem at home. We need to get outside help to solve it, but we don't want it to take it to a whole new level. It's a lot easier to address those situations as they're coming up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a cool ability for my role is that I'm able to be that kind of person for a lot of people. Come out and be like, yes, this stuff is very confusing. I don't even get it most of the time, but I'm here to be that guide of like, to be like, yeah, there's a city of Boise, which is just like this, like, ooh, it's an amorphous kind of idea, but try to make that a little bit more real of like, okay, cool. This is what you're needing help with. Here are some people that can help out with it, or making those connections, providing those resources. I think it's helps in those instances so, so much.
Yeah, just kind of that initial guidance. And there's even things for me as like a lifelong citizen here that I don't know how they work. I need help, you know. Going through the process of buying a home was like so eye-opening with interest rates and how much you actually end up spending. Like here's the house price and here's what you actually spend. Like it was just mind-blowing to me. So, and even things with like law enforcement, like if you were to get pulled over, what's your rights here? Mm-hmm. What's your rights there? Like I would have to look some of that stuff up. So it's a lot. And I imagine they get some of the information in their cultural orientation, but how do you retain all of that?
And it's a lot of information all at once. It's like, you're just in a whole new place trying to figure things out. It's like, here's just an info dump of all the things you need to know. It's like, okay, cool. I remembered it for the first 5 minutes after you presented it.
Yeah.
Oh no, now I'm in a situation. Oh yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, It's a lot. And that's why, yeah, community work is so important, to have that trusted mentorship of someone who's been there, done that, and can help guide. Well, I really appreciate getting to know you and hearing about your work. Is there anything else that you'd want to share that I haven't touched on yet, or just from any of the perspectives that we've talked about?
Oh, man, I could keep yapping. No, I think that covers it. I think I'm so lucky to live in such a welcoming place as Boise and the Treasure Valley has been. I've had a wonderful time and experience growing up here. I stuck around for this long, and I'm still here trying to give back to the community as best as I can, because it really was a positive force in me growing up, of the people that I met, the relationships that I made. And it's humbling and just so much fun to be able to give back and meet more people and try to be that person that I needed when I was younger and growing up.
That's great. Well, Anish, thank you so much.
Thank you again. This was so fun.
Thank you. And I hope to see you next time. Thanks for tuning in today.
Thank you for joining the conversation. For more information on how to be involved with refugee resettlement, please visit idahorefugees.org. Mosaics is produced by the Idaho Office for Refugees with grant support from the MJ Murdoch Charitable Trust. Music by the Afrosonics. Production in partnership with SB Studios.